93X presents the Celebration Rock Podcast with Steven Hayden.
At the end of the day, whether it's really admitted or not, I'm kind of the guy who actually makes the decision at the end of the day because I put the vocals on the record, and I do that the very last thing. So in reality, if like I really don't like something, I just won't sing on it. And it's kind of unfair in a way.
This is the Celebration Rock Podcast presented by 93X FM here in Minneapolis. I'm your host, Steven Hayden. Before we begin, I just wanted to thank you all for listening to the podcast. Of course, we wouldn't be here without our listeners. And if you're a fan of the show, I'd really appreciate it if you could give us a rating on iTunes, or if you're so inclined, even give us a review. Okay? All right, let's get started. One of the best and most interesting hard rock bands of the last 20 years is Deftones, a five-piece from Sacramento that emerged during the peak of nu metal in the mid-90s. But while most bands from that era are now treated as punchlines, Deftones continued to command respect from metal fans as well as listeners who never listened to metal bands. That's partly due to landmark records like 2000's White Pony, an intelligent melange of metal and shoegazer influences that at the time was completely out of step with the Limp Bizkits and Korns of the world, but now stands as one of the era's most important rock records. Another big reason why Deftones have stood apart from their peers is lead singer Chino Moreno, who ranks among the best vocalists in rock right now. Moreno's ability to affect both a warm croon and a terrifying scream personifies the dynamic dichotomy of Deftones' music, which often veers from the melodic to the heavy in the time that it takes to get from the verse to the chorus. Later this week, Deftones will release their eighth album, Gore. In advance of Gore's release, I spoke with Moreno about the record and the secret to Deftones' longevity. Here's our conversation. It's a little over a week before the record comes out. And, I mean, I know that you worked on this record for a long time, and now you're just sort of waiting for it to come out, for the world to hear it. What are your feelings usually at this point? Like, are you feeling anxious, nervous, excited? Like, what's the emotional temperature right now waiting for this record to come out?
I mean, probably just mostly excitement. You know, I think anything that that we've worked on, is, you know, as long as we have, you know, it just kind of feels good to release it and for people to hear it. And, you know, I think we're pretty, not really nervous. I'm kind of pretty confident with the material and with the record. I think people are, you know, the majority of people are going to dig it. And so, yeah, I mean, it's just mainly just like, you know, anticipation, I think, of just getting it out there and getting to work, really.
You know, with the way the way media is now, it's very easy to instantly get a reaction from people, like when if you want to know what people think about your record or whatever it is that you're doing creatively. Is that something that you seek out, like, fans' responses, or in a way, do you have to block that stuff out so it doesn't interfere with whatever you're doing?
I do. I try. I mean, like, it's funny because I'll be, like, scrolling through, you know, timelines on social media, and I'll look away. Like, I don't want to. I'm one of those people that, like, tries to ignore it, you know what I mean? You know, and it's always those things where you can hear a million great things, and then like you read like one bad thing, and then it's like, you know, the rest of your day you're just sitting there dwelling on it. I mean, that's the kind of mentality that I've always had. So I don't know. I think, like I said earlier, I think we're all really proud of what we made. I mean, you know, to make as many records as we made, and to actually like still be, you know, happy making records with each other and all through all this, I think that sort of outweighs, like, you know, one person just, like, you know, because what happens is, I think, you know, so many people have expectations of, you know, not only what the record should be, but, like, what it should sound like or what direction we should take, and, you know, and a lot of people like us for different reasons. I mean, some people like us, you know, for the more of the aggressive side of the things that we do. Some people like the more melodic stuff, and, you know, you can't really cater to everybody, so in the end, we sort of have to just go with our instincts. And, you know, when we make records, we don't sit around and like make a preconceived idea of what we're trying to make in general. We really just get together and react to one another, and so for that reason, it's sort of a really organic experience, and it is what it is. One of those things. It's what happens when us five guys get together and react to one another musically, and so for that reason, I think we're all pretty proud. And, you know, I think we just kind of go with that and just know that, listen, we're proud of what we did, and, you know, and then try not to look too deep into what people's reactions are going to be, but, you know, hope for the best, obviously.
Well, and I would have to think too that with a band like Deftones, that this age of like instant reactions is even a little bit more tricky than a lot of bands, because I feel like the records that you guys make, they're often not like immediate records. Like they're records that you have to sit with for a while and figure them out.
And I think this one more so than some of the other ones. I honestly think that this one is. I don't want to say it's harder to get into, but I want to say that the more you listen to it, the better it is.
Well, I was going to say, because, by the way, your record company is keeping very close tabs on this record, so you should be happy. They sent me a stream of the record. It was a 24-hour stream, so I had to pack all of my listens into that window of time. And that was definitely the impression that I got, that this is a record that there's a lot going on. It was a fascinating record. It was like a record that like I'm looking forward to delving into more because... You know, some of the notes I was taking as I was listening to it, psychedelic, bad vibes, sludgy, but also dreamy. It seemed to me that in a way that, I mean, a big part of Deftones' aesthetic has always been sort of beauty and ugliness, you know, and that dichotomy and mining that. But it seems like on this record, you're pushing those extremes even more. Like there's a beautiful moments on this record, and then there's moments that are really dark and... not ugly, but definitely aggressive and kind of pushing those dynamics as far as they can go. I mean, is that something that you were kind of conscious of as you were making the record? Is that the desired effect, I guess?
I think so. I mean, like I said a second ago, there's not really any one idea that we got going when we're making a record, but if there is something that's solid, that's kind of always been there in Deftones music, it's that dichotomy. So it's not like that's our goal to really accomplish that, but I think that's something that kind of happens naturally, and when it is happening, I think our instincts are to like expand on that, you know what I mean, and just see how far we can push things in both directions at the same time, and you know, by not making it seem, or by not having it be a forced thing at all, because honestly, it's kind of a natural thing that happens when we get together. I mean, you know, it's not as black and white as I write softer stuff and Stefan writes the harder stuff. I think a lot of people assume that, which isn't really the case. But I think within all of us, we all have you know, those parts of us that come through musically. I really think a lot of our the music that we make is a pretty much reflection of our daily life as well. Where, you know, and I think most people in general, and whether you're a musician or not, go through an array of emotions in a single day where, you know, as much as, you know, things might seem beautiful or things might seem the opposite of that. I mean, I think you know, everybody kind of goes through these sort of, you know, ups and downs and through dark and light and all in between. And, you know, the music for us, it kind of reflects that just normalcy, I guess, you know what I mean? Just like, this is what it's like. I mean, we're not the evilest band. we're not the friendliest band either. I think, but I think we can flirt with all this stuff, and in some way, you know, it's become our own, and it's a reflection of you know, of our lives in some way. You know,
I mean, that dichotomy that you talk about, that darkness and light, or evil and friendliness, or however you want to define it. I mean, is that something you've always been drawn to? Like even when you were just a fan of music growing up?
Yeah, most definitely. I mean, I'm still that way. But especially growing up, I mean, you know, I grew up listening to a lot of, well, honestly, when I was a little kid, I mean, you know, I was probably just like everybody else and listening to the radio. You know, and found myself liking, you know, bands like Culture Club and, you know, early new wave music and stuff like that. But when I discovered, like, darker music, I was just like enthralled by that too, and then bands like, you know, Depeche Mode like completely captivated me, because, you know, the music was sort of poppy and dreamy in some ways, but a lot of the lyrical content was a lot darker, and like that like right away was like, this speaks to me like directly, you know. So I've always liked that contrast, and even like you know, listening to like the Smiths and things like that, like, you know, where there's like this sort of underlying like sadness to that music, but like through that listening to it, it's like it brings me so much joy, you know, listening to it as a kid. Those have always been my sort of influences, are the things that's you know, speak to me or spoken to me the strongest, you know, music wise, you know. So I guess in some way, you know, I think that's sort of a blueprint for, or became some, you know, a blueprint of like what type of music we want to make, not even genre, but just like mood wise, you know, like what kind of moods we want to convey within our music.
Yeah, you made reference to this a little bit before about how there's an assumption with Deftones that you are sort of the more of the like ethereal guy or melodic guy, and that Stefan is the metal guy, and that's where that dichotomy comes from. And you were sort of debunking that, saying that exists in all the members of the band. But you know, you were talking earlier about how, you know, this record and all of your records are a result of you guys getting in a room together and working it out. I mean, just from what I've read about the band, I mean, it seems like over the years that, you know, there's been ups and downs with that. There are times like where there's tension, where you guys aren't maybe on the same page during the process of all that. I mean, how has that evolved over the years? I mean, does that get easier as you are a band longer, or do those tensions still come up all the time?
No, it's been going on since the beginning of the band. It's nothing that is, I don't feel like it's really gotten worse. Although I really don't feel like it's gotten any easier. To me, it's just like that dynamic that we have with, you know, between us. You know, the goal, I think, if anything, for us is to like to have everybody, all five of us, equally like excited about what music that we're making, and that is what's maybe like, you know, some of the records has taken us longer to make than other records because those moments are fewer and far between. But when we all are on this, you know, we all do tap into something and all are equally intrigued in something that we're coming up with at the time. Those are usually like the best moments, and I wish that all the moments could be like that. But it's not real life, you know what I mean? We're just not even musically, but just like you know, our moods, you know what I mean? Our sometimes we're on different planes, we're on different, you know, some of us are dealing with different things on same days and you know, so it's never like, it's never anything that like we figured a formula out for that we can just do when we want to do it. You know what I mean? It's definitely like a trial and error thing. But those type of things, I guess, you know, in the long run actually make it more special because it's not like something that we've completely figured out. You know, it's just like when we can actually, as different as we all are, you know, when we can actually like come up like be on this on the same wavelength and something come together, you know, that's usually good. And with this record, I mean, I guess it's been pretty much publicized that, you know, for probably the first third of making this record, Stefan was like really reluctant to like jump on board and to be or, you know, just to kind of be a part of it. So he was there every day. I mean, and you know, we were definitely getting along. It's not like we were in there arguing or nothing like that. I mean, honestly, I think some of the best music we make is when there is that friction, we are arguing, and you have two people. I wouldn't say arguing, but when you have two people with strong opinions that might be different.
Right.
So what ends up happening is you end up sort of start like, you know, the other guy wants to prove the other guy that their direction is the better direction. So what ends up happening is that, you know, you end up out like building something because you just keep stacking things on, you know what I'm saying? It's like it's a, where you're building each other up instead, you know what I mean? And behind it, it's the passion of making the best thing, or, you know, or where your, I guess where your instincts are telling you to go. You want to follow those instincts so bad that you want to prove to the other guys that, look, this is the right way. It feels so right to me. And the other guy's telling you, no, this feels so right to me. And, you know, I think only good things, majority of times, good things come from that.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, so we do have, we had a lot, it took a while for Stefan to come in, but then once he did, it was just like, for us, it made us even so much more happy because I want to see him smile. I want him to be just equally as excited as everybody else in the band. You know, but like I said earlier, sometimes people are just in different places. So as opposed to like, like getting mad about it or sitting around or whatever. It's just like, you know, we'll just keep on moving forward. And, and in the end, everything sort of fell into place and came together, and everything that Stefan, you know, did on the record, it was like, you know, lovely. So
yeah,
it works out. But just like I said, it's not the easiest thing to figure out how to get to that place. It's some, you know, it's a challenge, but that's what makes it worth it, I guess.
Well, and you know, like when Stefan did that interview where he talked about how early on he wasn't, you know, totally sure about the band's direction or feeling the record at first, he said something else that I thought was interesting, where he basically said that like, that everyone in the band at some point has gone through something similar on past records, like where, you know, maybe they weren't into the record at first, but then they came around later. And I mean, you were just talking about that now, about how that's happened throughout the history. Has there ever been is there a record for you that while you guys were working
definitely.
On it?
Definitely. And you know what? And it really occurred to me that like, you know, like Stefan's frustration, I really understand it, because like where it's unfair, you know, for him is that I'm like, at the end of the day, whether, you know, it's really admitted or not, I'm kind of the guy who actually makes the decision at the end of the day, because I'm the guy, I put the vocals on the record, and I do that the very last thing. So like, in reality, if like I really don't like something, I just won't sing on it. And
right.
and it's kind of unfair in a way, you know what I mean? Because it's like, you know, and I don't get off on that, believe me. Like, I don't, like, you know, it's a hard thing for me to do, too, because it's like, I don't want to shut somebody's idea down or whatever, especially if somebody's excited about something. But honestly, at the end of the day, like, if I'm not really into something, I can't get myself to sing on it. I just won't. I mean, I wish I could, but I just can't. And so, yeah, we've had, like, the record that we made this record that we never put out, titled Eros, that
right.
we were going to put out, and we decided not to put it out. Our bass player Chi was in a car accident and during the time of we were finishing up the record, and
right.
I was actually putting vocals on it there, but I was having such a hard time singing on the record because I wasn't like inspired by a lot of the music. I mean, the music was, it was a weird time. I mean, like us as a band, we were actually really, really getting along really well. We were actually reconnecting after, more than a few years of just like sort of being disconnected. And not that we weren't getting along, but we were just disconnected, disjointed, you know, as a band. Everybody was sort of like just coming in and doing their part and then separating again, and it wasn't like a really group effort of a record. It was more like it was just like everybody was just doing just enough, just their part, and then leaving all these kind of song ideas to me to kind of like make them into songs. And I just was like not inspired by a lot of this stuff, and I tried, and I mean some of the songs I did like four or five different, you know, vocal ideas too. You know, and I just wasn't really happy with it, and at the end of the day, the record never came out. You know, and people are really, you know, very curious about it, and like, what is this record like, and blah blah blah. And
right.
like, I seriously just like want to tell people, like, look at it, it's just not that good. I mean, like, I know it's exciting to think that there's something that we have that no one's ever heard, but like, trust me, you're not missing out on much, because like, it's really just. Not that it couldn't one day get there, but it's just right now, I mean, where it was left, it was very just sort of uninspired, and that's just what it was, you know. And luckily, we got a chance to move on and to make a brand new record from scratch, which was the Diamond Eyes record, which was the complete opposite of that, which was totally inspired, which was, you know, written with us all together in a room, like in this, like, month and a half, you know, amount of time of just, like, sort of capturing lightning in a bottle, and that is something that at that point we hadn't done, you know, in years. And honestly, that's like the essence of the band. It's like, you know, us five guys getting in a room and reacting to each other and coming out with songs, and that's like, you know, that's when I feel like when we're at our best. So when we pass that point, you know, from that Diamond Eyes point on, I believe that was 2009 or maybe 2011, I don't remember, but when that record came out, I mean, or when we wrote that record, recorded it, it was sort of like this, we were all sort of reinvigorated, just like with this feeling of like, this is what it's like to make music with your friends.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Where it is, and it didn't feel like a job after that. You know what I mean?
So. Right. Yeah. It's funny that you brought up Eros, because that was actually on my list of things I wanted to ask you about, and okay. It just makes me think about, you know, this idea of lost albums. You know, how people romanticize that, and how sometimes
it's
better.
It's a fantasy. Yeah.
Right. Sometimes it's better if it just stays lost. Like if you can just imagine what it sounds like versus actually hearing it. Some albums are just better lost.
That's what I try to tell people. I'm like, what you imagine is much better than it would.
You know, it's interesting hearing you talk about the band kind of coming in and out of periods where you weren't feeling connected to each other. Because I'm fascinated by bands like Deftones that are able to go the distance, that last for decades and keep putting out records, because it's a rare thing. Most bands implode after 3 or 4 records; they can't keep it going. And I mean, is the secret to that? Is it the personal relationships? Because I mean, you have this personal relationship, obviously. You have this creative relationship, and they're both important. But I mean, is the personal part more important? Like, how do you keep a band going?
I think so. I definitely think so. I think the fact that we were actually all of us, the core of us, me and Stefan and Abe, us three, were the standing original members, were pretty much like friends before we even had this band. I mean, Stefan was a friend from my neighborhood that I knew. He was one of the other kids that skateboarded in my neighborhood. He was a couple years older than me, but we'd all hang out, you know, skateboarding, and he had a bunch of equipment in his garage, so everybody kind of gravitated towards his house and would just always hang out around there and pick up an instrument and play music. And so it was honestly a friendship before that. Abe, the same way, I knew him from school, but in junior high school, we met in 7th grade, and we became friends. You know, we skateboarded every day after school, and the friendships definitely, you know, were there before the music. And then, you know, and then we became men together. I mean, we were little kids when we started the band. We were, you know, 15, 16 years old, and so not only have we known each other forever, but we toured the world together. We've, you know, spent day in, day out, in bands and buses and driving, and flying around the world. And there's like this certain, like, you know, friendship that has like been tested really tested, you know, and it comes down to like, you know, is like as different as we all are as people, like we actually really do enjoy each other's company. And more than that, like we enjoy what happens when all of us are firing on all pistons, you know what I mean? And when we create something together. And that's the main thing. I mean, you know, even musically, it's like, I love music. I love making music. I have a studio at my house, for instance, and I probably go in there once a week, maybe, and go in there. And majority of the time I go in there, like, I'll pick up my guitar for a couple seconds, and then I'll end up just, like, putting on a record and listening to music, whatever. But, like, my point is that, like, I don't really have any interest to, like, make music by myself. Like, I don't have this, like, undying need to, man, I need to just, like, create something, you know, and blah, blah, blah. Or I have all these lyrics and all these thoughts and all these music ideas that I need to get out to the world. Like, I honestly don't feel that. I'm more excited to meet up with Sergio or Abe or Stefan, any of the guys, and just like sit there and like make something with them. You know what I mean? That to me is way more exciting, creating music with somebody else, especially, you know, my best friends, than just like trying to like make some music by myself that I feel like everybody needs to hear. Like I just honestly don't have that in me. You know what I mean? And maybe I never did. I don't know. But like, you know, it's getting harder and harder for me to want to create music by myself. I just really like making music with other people.
When you have that close relationship, you know, like with these guys, obviously, you know, as friends and also just as bandmates, I mean, is it ever weird then when you go off and do like a Palms record or a Crosses record? Is there any weirdness there, or do people do they understand that you have to do that kind of thing?
I mean, I wouldn't, I wouldn't say there isn't any weirdness. I, especially in the beginning too, I think it was probably there was a little bit of just little vibes going on because it's probably close to just like, I mean, honestly, like being in a marriage, and it's like, you know, these guys are ones I've been making music with forever, and it's like, and then I go out and do something with someone else, you know, I think they were just sort of just like, why, you know, and my reasoning from it is like simple. It's just like, it has nothing to do with like not being fulfilled, I guess, in some way in my quote unquote marriage or band. It's basically just like, you know, it's fun. And if I'm not doing, and if I'm not busy, like during the time, it's not like I like whatever, you know, say, oh, I can't do this Deftones tour or this record right now because I'm doing this. It was never that. It was like, there's still a lot of off time. And when I'm at home and you know, I have people presenting me music and saying, hey, what, you know, check this out, blah, blah, blah. It's like, I just was inspired to like, to record and make music, you know, and that's pretty much it. You know, it's nothing more than that. I think now the band, like, you know, understands a little bit more. And honestly, I felt like at that point, I guess I was very just like, I don't know. I was just like, I got in this like few year, like sort of thing where I was just like so productive. Like every single day I would wake up and I would like, I felt the need to just like be productive musically, and not so much even by myself, like I was saying earlier, but just like, you know, just to work on something, you know, and I had, you know, a whole hard drive filled up with just, you know, stuff from Palm, stuff from Crosses, you know, the Team Sleep stuff. I'm still sitting on so much stuff, you know, that stuff now that I eventually, you know, want to work on. But at that time I was just like, you know, I'm home, you know, I'm not really, I'm not really a person that likes to like play video games or like, you know, like to me, like the most exciting thing for me is to like create something with someone else from nothing. You know, once there was no sound and now, you know, me putting my vocals with this thing, if there's something there, that will be there forever after I'm, you know, dead and gone. And that thought was just like very exciting for me. So yeah. I spent like 3 or 4 years like just like recording and I want to say like probably like 4 or 5 records like within like a few year period, which was like for me, it was really satisfying because there was some like the Saturday Night Riffs record, for instance, which took 3 years for me to just like finish that record. So like the fact that I like Rick was like just on, sort of on a roll and just recording all this stuff, whatever, I guess just sort of like felt vindicating too, because I'd spent so long like, you know, feeling like I didn't have that in me anymore or whatever. And then so like it was like this reinvigorated, I was just invigorated, you know what I mean? And it was just a good thing. And I think, you know, in retrospect now, it's like everybody's cool, you know, everybody just is, you know, hopefully.
Yeah, well, I have to tell you that I'm a big fan of the Palms record. And if there's anyone listening who hasn't heard that record, I recommend checking that out. That's like one of my favorite things I think that you've ever done, like with anybody.
Oh, thanks, man.
And I feel
and that was just a thing where it's like, you know, Aaron, the drummer, was a good friend of mine, and we would go hiking like, you know, like a few times a week and just like talk music and and he's like, yo, we're, you know, me and the rest of the ISIS guys are making we've been working on this record. And I said, oh, cool, I want to hear it, you know, I'm a big fan of ISIS. He sent me the record, and it was just an instrumental record. I mean, pretty much that's what they were going to make. And he's like, yo, would you do it? Would you try, you know, maybe doing, would you be down to do vocals on a song? And I was like, sure. So he sent me the record, and I ended up just writing, you know, pretty much over the whole record. So here it was, something that already existed, and I just, like, you know, added my vocals to it. And it was just fun because it was experiment for me. I've never, like, written vocals over something that I didn't. That I, usually I'm part of the music itself too, so I kind of know where my vocals are going to fit in. So this was like me, like a puzzle, like me trying to fit where I'm going to fit, how I'm going to fit what I do into what they, you know, what already exists from them. So, I mean, it was just a fun experience and like good dudes, you know what I mean? So like, you know, just good times, I guess.
Well, and it seemed like on that record, and I mean, your vocals sound great on Deftones records too, but like on that record, you really let sort of the buttery side of your vocals really shine. Like, it was really beautiful. Your voice just sounds really great on that record. I mean, like, as a vocalist, I mean, you really are one of the most, I think, distinctive singers in hard rock over the last like 20 years. Like, how did that evolve for you? I mean, were you always singing when you were a kid? I mean, when did you realize that you could do this?
Not till like pretty deep. I mean, even after we recorded our first record, I still didn't feel like I was I still don't really listen to that record. I can't listen to it because to me, it's like
it's like high school yearbook photo or something.
Yeah, I mean, it just wasn't that, like, you know, even after, you know, we were, like, right when we were done recording, I just felt like, oh, man, we blew it, you know what I mean? Like, because I honestly thought that we were a better band at that point. Like, as far as, like, our live show, we were, like, very energetic. We were young. We just, like, you know, the shows were insane. But, like, musically, like, we still really hadn't, like, honed our skills. And me, vocally, I definitely hadn't. And I still feel like it's a work in progress, but it wasn't until like maybe the around the Fur album where I really felt like I was doing something that was a little bit special, you know, especially because the climate of music at that point was new metal or the genre that was like starting to peak with, you know, a lot of these other bands that were like coming out and starting to get played on the radio. And it was like almost like a, I know, for us it was a trip, and we didn't like kind of follow that path. I feel like even with Around the Fur, we started to sort of take a left turn from just straight aggressive metal or what do you call it, I don't want to say rap rock, but like just like yeah. I don't know, just like groovy metal with like, you know, rhythmic lyrics or whatever. I liked some of that stuff, whatever, but like I didn't feel like that was the end all be all to like being creative. I felt like, you know, there's so much music that we like, and with that record, I feel like we really started expanding, you know, our sound musically and me vocally as well. And then obviously with White Pony, I think it even went, you know, further, and that was the more defining record of us sort of, you know, creating our own path.
Totally.
But yeah, it wasn't until then where I really started to feel like I kind of knew, you know, what I was doing in some way.
Yeah, I mean, and I like that you brought that up, because to me what has always, you know, separated Deftones from other bands is that you've never really fit anywhere in terms of a scene or a trend. I mean, you're described often as a metal band, but I don't know if you've ever made a straight up metal record. Maybe Adrenaline could be described as that, but even that, I think you could argue about. And you know, you mentioned new metal, and Deftones were grouped into that for a little while, but when that bubble burst, you guys just kept going while a lot of other bands fell by the wayside. I mean, is that, I mean, obviously you're just going to do what you do and people are going to react to it, but like, how conscious are you of sort of being your own island and not, you know, associating yourself too closely with anything that might blow up or, you know, not work?
Well, nowadays it's not, we don't really have to think too much about that anymore. It's not like there's any sort of scene that's kind of, you know, that, I mean, I think we're sort of far out of, you know, anything. It's funny too, because like what you just said about metal, it's like people get so mad, like some of our fans get so mad because like they're like, why don't you guys be a metal band anymore? And I'm like, were we ever really a metal band? I didn't really think so, but I mean, I feel like if we played some metal shows, you know, we might get beat up. I mean, like back in the day, like you know what I mean, like you know, not literally, but just like, you know, just like I always felt like we were a little too you know, wimpy for, you know, some metal stuff, you know what I mean? But you know, so yeah, I never really felt that way. But today it's a lot easier. I don't really say that, but back then we tried to actually stay out of, you know, those genres, or especially the new metal genre. Like we actually made a effort to, like, you know, we turned down so many, like, you know, Limp Bizkit used to ask us going on tour all the time, come play with us, Korn, I used to always, you know, whatever. And you know, not that we disliked those bands or thought that we were better than those bands, but we just wanted to distance ourselves because we wanted to pave our own sort of road. And I kind of knew, I mean, it's in the name itself, new metal. Anytime something is new, it's going to be old. Like, you know,
right.
Give it a little time, it's going to be old. And so, like, just the name itself, I was just like, I don't want to be, like, lumped in with this because it's, you know, it's going to implode and we'll definitely, you know, there's a good chance we'll implode with it if we, you know, embrace this thing. So, like, so we just kind of were very conscious about just sort of, like, staying on the outskirts, you know what I mean? Which is crazy because it kind of left us, like, you know, it left us out of a lot of stuff. I mean, one of the biggest things it left us out of is, like, getting paid. I mean, we like turned away a lot of money, like a lot of tours. You know, we didn't. You know, we made a lot of decisions where a lot of people probably, especially our business people, probably thought we were, you know, idiots because whatever. But I honestly felt like we made decisions based on, like, we wanted to have longevity in making music and you know, I don't want to say we were totally, you know, prophetic, whatever. But we kind of just felt like, you know what I mean, it'd be nice to sort of just do a slow build and just follow our instincts, whatever directions they take us, as opposed to just, like, catching in on what's happening right now. Because at that time, you have to understand that, like, there was some of these bands, like Limp Bizkit, for instance, who were selling crazy amounts of records. I mean,
right.
Obviously, I think they wrote more hit songs than we did. So that's the main reason. But at the same time, it's like, you know, they're selling in the first week, like, you know, 3 million albums and shit like that. Like, you know, in the end of, like, one of their records, like, you know, 7 million records, where White Pony, which is our biggest record we've ever released, you know, only sold 1 million. So you think about the difference of 1 million to 7 million. It's huge. Like, huge. You know what I mean? So, like, for us, sometimes it was a hard pill to swallow. It was like, look, man, all these other bands are getting, like, on, you know, on MTV, TRL. They're playing, like, the you know, the Spring Break Beach House. They're, like, you know, they're super famous. They're rubbing elbows with you know, Britney Spears and all these other people. And, like, we're still, like, an underground band in a way.
Right.
So some of that was kind of, like, hard for us to swallow in a way, but not that hard because, honestly, we made the decision and we stuck with it.
Well, and
now, you know, happy that we did.
Yeah, and you know, and part of that, as you were saying, is a promotional decision not to tour with certain bands or to do certain things that those bands do. But I have to think it's also artistic. I mean, that record White Pony, I mean, was there something in your heads at that time thinking, like, well, let's make a record that will really separate us from these other bands? Because, I mean, it seemed like that record, I mean, it was so, I mean, it delivers as, like, a hard rock record, but it's so different from what else was going on at that time.
Yeah, I mean, we didn't like, sit and talk about it, but it was happening. While we started to make the record, it was forming itself that way. It was, like, you know, it was starting to sound, you know, I mean, in retrospect, it wasn't the most avant-garde record. It's not like it was, like, totally weird and like, bugged out there. It was still, you know, it was still very much us, but it wasn't. Yes, we did make a decision to not just, like, go with whatever was the easiest. You know what I mean? It was like, let's I guess, you know, push ourselves in a I don't want to say in a comfortable way, but just, like, trying to. Like, if something felt too formulated or anything like that, we would, like, definitely just say, okay, well, forget that. Let's try this. So, like, the weirder parts were, like, the more interesting parts on all, you know, from all of us. And no matter what direction it was, as long as it was, like, a little off kilter, it was like that's what we embraced. You know,
right.
And I think that's what sort of made it fun to make too. It wasn't the easiest record to make. It was one of those times when it was, like, what I was saying earlier, like, as far as, like, you know, some of us not seeing eye to eye, and then, like, but in the end, it escalating into something that either one of us could see. You know what I mean? It was bigger than somebody being right or wrong, but, like, just pushing the envelope more than anything.
Yeah, and to me, like, when I listen to that record now, the parts I love, it's not even the parts that are weird or whatever. It's also the parts that, like, you know, like, there's songs that remind me of Swerve Driver and Ride, and, you know, bringing those influences into, like, a hard rock record, you know, in the early 2000s. I mean, that was really different and fresh, and it was exciting to kind of see a band, you know, work with those kinds of roots and then integrate it into something else.
Most definitely, yeah. I mean, I think, any time that those sort of influences can come through or cycle through us, whatever, and come out through the music, and people that are also fans of that stuff can hear it in there. But, you know, then again, but it not being so blatant, that's like when I feel like you've done something, you know, exciting, at least for me, because I'm a fan of music before anything. So, like you know, if somebody says that, whoa, that reminds me of Swerve Driver, I'm going to be like, yes. You know, instead of me being mad about it, I'll be like, yes. You know what I mean? I didn't intend to do that, but I love Swerve Driver. So that's probably how it happened. You know what I mean?
Right. Well, and I think, too, I mean, you were saying before that, well, it doesn't sound like the most avant-garde record now. I always feel like the records that are truly forward-thinking, when you listen to them 15 years later, they sound contemporary. They don't sound weird anymore because, in a way, like the rest of us have caught up to it. And when I think about White Pony, I in my brain, I don't even group it with other hard rock records necessarily. To me, it's almost like in that class of like records like Kid A or Yankee Hotel Foxtrot, you know, these sort of like experimental records that came out at the turn of the century that were imagining like what rock music was going to sound like in the new century, you know?
Wow.
And
yeah, I mean, you know, and there's no doubt that some of those records, you know, we weren't influenced by it, you know, as well. You know what I mean? So yeah, most definitely. I mean, it's crazy that it ended up being that way. Like I said, we didn't like have a preconceived idea that we were trying to create that. And I think if we did, we probably wouldn't have been able to do it. Like, it's something that just happened, you know what I mean? And like I said earlier, we were firing on all pistons, and like everybody wanted to like, was trying to outdo each other within the band. Like, and not in a vicious way, but just like trying to out, like be like, oh, you like that? Well, yo, check this out. You know what I mean? And it was like, so sort of just like escalating into something that, you know, just builds itself, you know what I mean? Because you're sitting there trying to like, you know, show out the guy next to you, you know what I mean? And in a positive way, you know? So I think that is always a good thing. And so like when we make records now, we definitely reflect on that. It's like, okay, so now we're going to make a new record. So, you know, obviously the first question would be like, where do you want to start? Or what should we do? And like the idea, if we were to sit down and say, okay, well, we should make something like, we were very successful with White Pony, so maybe we should do something like that. Like, that would never work. You know what I mean? It's like, it has to be something that just like, that just happens. And, you know, back to Gore, it's like that doesn't always just happen. Sometimes it's like it takes a different route to get there. You know what I mean? So there's nothing that we haven't figured anything. And I'm kind of glad that we haven't figured out the quickest road to get to where we want to go. You know what I mean? Because honestly, right. I just think for a lot of reasons, we'd fail, you know, and rightly so. You know what I mean? If we did approach things that way.
So, Chino, you were talking earlier about, you know, longevity being important to the band, you know, pretty early on, you know, kind of thinking in those terms. And, you know, it's obviously worked. I mean, here we are, you know, 20-some years later. This is the eighth record. When you get to this point in your career, and you're looking forward, I mean, does it become a matter of, do you feel like you're competing with yourself in a way? Like, do you think about that in terms of your own discography? You know, I mean, because you were saying earlier that you don't necessarily want to recreate a White Pony or any other record you've made. But do you feel a sense of like we have to top what we did, or we need to honor what we did by moving in this direction?
Yeah, I mean, very much so. It's very much a personal, you know, goal kind of thing that you want to make. It's like I don't ever want to feel like we're just putting out a record just to put out a record. You know what I mean?
Right.
Or we're just doing it just because we don't have anything else to do. You know what I mean? I honestly want to, like, if we are going to put out a record, I want it to be something that, for one, that, you know, not to sound completely selfish, but like something that, you know, we've got to make it for us. We have to like it. We have to make something that we're excited about. Other, because if not, then like, you know, we can't make a record for anybody else or anybody's idea of what it should be or whatever. And even though we don't know what it should be or you know, whatever, we know that we've got to like it. All five of us have to like it.
Right.
You know. So, because you know, we're gonna be the ones that have to play it, and we're gonna have to be the ones that are gonna have to live with it. You know what I mean? So,
right.
So I mean, really, I think it is one of those things where it's, you know, it's we kind of put it on ourselves, and then it's healthy, I think.
Yeah. Well, Chino, it's been great talking with you, man. And best of luck on the new record, Gore, when it comes out next week. It's really great. And like I said, I'm looking forward to delving into it more myself.
Right on, man. Well, thank you so much. I appreciate it.
All right. Take care. All right. That was Chino Moreno from Deftones. Again, I've listened to Gore probably 2 times. I did not have that much time to spend with it before our interview, so I'll definitely be picking up that record when it comes out later this week. Definitely want to delve deeper into it, but I really like what I've heard so far. And you know, Deftones are definitely, you know, they're definitely one of the most consistent bands, certainly in hard rock right now. So they always seem to deliver when they put out a new record. Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode. And like I said before, as I pleaded with you at the beginning of this episode, if you could help us spread the word, help grow our audience, talking about us on social media, or if you have a friend who's into music and is looking for a podcast, maybe they're going on a road trip, tell them about this podcast. Help us spread the word. And of course, if you'd find that you don't like the podcast, feel free to keep that to yourself. Thank you so much for listening. We will be back next week with more Celebration Rock. Take care.